Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode 78, and it's about half that temperature here in the Midwest. It's a little chilly on this Monday night as myself and the doctor, the PhD, Mr. Tony D. Viss. I see how I strung that together there.
That was good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I was a former freestyle rapper on the mean streets of Sheldon, Iowa. So
I remember that.
do you
got
remember?
Your mixtape
on 8-track.
Yeah.
42 seconds. back with Mr. Viss here. He's thawing out a little bit from European football practice. Tony, how are things in the CR tonight?
Chilly. You know, I think I told you earlier when we were talking that there's probably about 15 minutes of practice left. I'm like, I need to go home. I can't feel my feet. My fingers were numb as well. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit more thawed out now about 40 minutes after practice being over. But, yeah, and it sounds like we're getting some rain and snow on Thursday, and there are more chances of that going forward as well. So we got a little bit spoiled there with the 70s and stuff, and now we're a little bit more back to reality.
I will be heading south, so I hope to avoid all of that stuff. When folks are hearing this, I will actually be in my hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, for the NCAA tournament. My oldest, he said around Christmas time, he said, "Dad, for graduation gift or whatever, if Nebraska makes it to the tournament, I want to go." I'm like, "All right, let's, you know, you start saving some money and we'll do it." And found a way to make it work. And so we are heading out Thursday morning. I was ready to go anywhere. You know, we're hosting here in Omaha, which would have been the most convenient, would have been the most expensive tickets, but would have been the most convenient if Nebraska would have came here. But I was pretty much okay going anywhere for various different reasons, except for Spokane, Washington. That was the one I was just like, man, that's just going to be an expensive flight and all of that stuff, and kind of open-ended. But yeah, we're heading down to Memphis on Thursday morning, getting up early Thursday morning, and we're road tripping down, buddy. So
awesome. That'll be a great time. Huskers playing well right now. Mm-hmm. Looking really, really good. You know, it's been interesting because obviously they gave Illinois everything that Illinois wanted, and then, you know, I thought they did a good job. And I've heard a couple teams that have played Illinois lately, you know, they might have been down to Illinois at the half and like, "Hey, what happened? How did Illinois, you know, come back on you?" type thing. And they're like, you want me to get in trouble? And they're like, "What do you mean?" Well, basically things that were a foul in the first half were not called a foul in the second half.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of trips to the free throw line, but that's part of the game, you know.
Yep.
And you got to move on from it. And, you know, you just got to stay up to the standard. And that brings us to this week's title. How'd you like that little tie-in there, buddy?
Ooh, good segue.
Yeah, thank you. So we're going to talk about overcoaching. And Tony found a thread. I believe it was from Coach Berg again, wasn't it, Tony?
Yeah, he puts out some really good stuff. If you're not following him on Twitter, I don't know if you're doing Twitter right.
Mm-hmm. And before we get to that, we have to do our uniform numbers here. Episode 78, I've got three offensive linemen and a defensive lineman, Mr. Viss.
Whew, okay. Let's try some O-line first. Seem like there have been some tackles through the years that have won 78. I'm going to go Larry Allen of the Cowboys.
Was not on my list.
Doggone. Anthony Munoz?
Anthony Munoz is on there, yes. Legendary Cincinnati Bengal.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I was hoping Larry Allen was on there because then I would have been over halfway through the O-line. Shoot.
I've got a Ram and a Raider.
Okay. Jackie Slater?
There you have it.
Okay.
That's the Ram.
And the Raider. Shoot. Raider. Raider one is, I'm not making any traction.
Art Shell.
Oh, Arch. Okay,
Yep,
yeah,
yep,
yeah.
yep. So, and
Okay.
then defensive lineman.
D line. Can I get a team?
It'll kind of give it away.
Oh.
Let's see how well you've
Bruce
kept
Smith.
Bruce Smith. There you go. Yes, I was going to say, here was the current event I was going to use with you that we talked about in class today. A man had a 750-pound pet alligator removed from his house from the suburbs of this city today.
Ooh,
Yeah,
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Yeah. Built an indoor pool for an alligator and like had people get in the pool with the alligator. I'm like, I've seen too many episodes of Swamp People to get into a pool with an alligator.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I have to have a death wish to do that.
Exactly. So, but you got all four of them, guy. Or you got three out of the four. So,
Yeah, but Art Shell, I missed that one.
yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Good run. Good run. So, yeah, episode 78, we're going to talk about overcoaching. And as it kind of evolved into it, it kind of ended up being more about standards in a lot of ways. So Tony, this is kind of Dean Smith inspired. Why did you kind of pick this one out? What did you like about it?
You know, the one thing is, you know, we get into this time of the year, you know, you can overcoach. You can give your kids way too many things to think about. You know, I think one of the things that inspired me a little bit with it, we both got that YouTube video with Coach Starkey, and with Coach Starkey, he was talking about how kids have changed, and they used to have 10 to 13 page scouting reports, and
Yep.
now they've got it down to a couple, two or three pages. And it just kind of, that was what really kind of sparked me in terms of the fact that, hey, this time of the year, you know, you want to cover stuff. Don't get me wrong, but you cannot cover everything. If you get your kids out there trying to go through 13 pages of a scouting report, you know, you're going to get paralysis by analysis. And sometimes you just have to understand it's about the Jimmy and the Joes. It's not always about being able to defend well with this. Much this is their out of bounds play and go through 15 different out of bounds plays. That's just, you can't.
Yep. And I think that, you know, overcoaching, over talking through it. Yeah, we've talked about Kevin Eastman calls it coaching in bullet points. And I really, really liked I've always liked that analogy of it where you just got to coach quick, move on and move to the next thing. And you really have to change your vocabulary for your players these days because it's no fault of their own. Their brains are literally just different than ours are, and probably good for them that nobody's brains are like ours, Tony.
That is true.
That's a pretty obvious statement. But in all seriousness, the days of the 6-minute soliloquy on footwork, on rebounding box outs, that's over, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, like you said, there's been a variety of coaches. You know, you can't coach in paragraphs. You have to coach in phrases.
So let's dive into it, Tony. I think one of the things that we talked about here, and again, a lot of this was Dean Smith inspired, and just if you're going with Dean Smith stuff, that's really, really good. So, but the first thing that I had written down, you are what you emphasize, and to praise the process. I know we spent a lot of time talking about, hey, we've got to get 1% better today. That's the only thing that we can really, really do. Let's not focus on the result. Let's not focus on how many drills did you win or anything like that. Just do you feel like you got 1% better at the end of the day? And if every player in that circle, you know, we had 16 girls on our team this year. If everybody gets 1% better, that's roughly, if we have six practices the first week of the season, well, in theory, we should be 100% better by the end of the week, by the end of our first week, because, you know, 16 times six is roughly, oh gosh, math,
96.
90, 96%-ish. So we're going to round up a little bit. We're going to go to 100%. We're close to being 100% better if we get at least 1% better. And so I think so often we want to hurry up and play our best ball in the first week of the season. You honestly, really, I know this is going to sound weird. You don't want that. You want to have your team go through a few tough things and have to work through the process and understand the process. And you know, how many teams do you see that get off to a fast start that sometimes limp home because they kind of thought they had the process figured out early, and then when things started going sideways a little bit, the bottom kind of falls out of the boat. So I think you are what you emphasize. I know for us, it's 1% better. Let's get 1% better every time that we go out and praise that process. Attack the process of getting better. Now that ties in to our attack philosophy, or the attack philosophy that we had. You know, those are things that I think of when that bullet point comes up, Tony. I don't know where you're at. I'll turn the floor over to you.
Yeah, you know, you talk about 1% better and stuff. I've heard people, you know, kind of give the analogy of like boards, and you want to make sure you're one board better each practice, just kind of that tangible thing to look at. And that is very, very important. You know, I think you want to emphasize getting off to a good start, but there's no way you can get off to a perfect start. You know, that just doesn't happen. And part of the thing that you have to do is you have to fall in love with the process, and that process has a lot of different things involved with it. Sometimes there are the high moments, sometimes there are the low moments. And if you let the low moments pull you down, and that affects your attitude and that affects your effort, you're going to struggle, because that's a part of the thing. Is if you can get into that area and struggle through it and work through it, you come out on the other side of it so much better. And there's going to be those moments in time where you're not going to play your best, where it's not going to be your day. And how do you handle that? Do you get your dauber down? You know, do you white knuckle it up and get your way through it? And those are easier said than done. You know, and one of the things that I think some teams do is once the season's over, they go from that, they take a few weeks off, and they're back at it in their spring league and doing this, that, and the other. Then they flow right into their summer program, and they're going, you know, 5-6 times a week in their summer program. Then they get in the fall, and they're into open gyms and fall leagues and stuff like that. My point being is you're burning your kids out. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to give them some breaks. You know, even what I believe is at his peak, the greatest basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan, took weeks off, and you have to have some of that freshness, because it's a long season. And if you are burnt out, you know, at the end of November, beginning of December, man, you still have a number of weeks left, and you're going to miss where you can get to, because now's about improving yourself individually as a basketball player. And then November through March is where you improve your team as a basketball team. Yep. And sometimes we get those things kind of mixed around a little bit. And then the other thing I thought that you hit on that was really, really good too, Marty, you are what you emphasize, you know, and that's something that's so very, very important. And you can't emphasize everything. And that's the overcoaching side of this.
Yes.
You know, you can emphasize a handful, maybe a handful plus of things, but you can't emphasize everything.
Yeah.
And so you've got to figure out what are those tenets, what are those foundation pieces that you're going to be about, and really hammer that home and emphasize. And I think that's one of the things about Coach Smith that is so important is Dean Smith was an all-time basketball coach. And what I mean by that is this: he would be good in every single era of the game of basketball. If Dean Smith was around today, his program would be very, very successful. If Dean Smith coached back in the 1930s, 1940s, his program would have been very, very successful. What you take from him are those foundational pieces, because he has some tried and true things.
Mm-hmm. What's your first bullet point here, Tony?
The one that I guess I would go with is this, all right? One of the things that I thought that John, our head coach here at Kennedy, did was the fact that he kept them level. You know, not every game is a life and death deal, all right? Mm-hmm. You've got to prepare every day to be successful and stay on that level thing. If you get too high during the good times and too low during the bad times, you are going to cancel yourself out. You're going to burn yourself out. And you've got to always keep in mind the big picture side of things, all right? One of the great things about kids is if you ask them a question, they'll tell you the truth. Why do you play sports? Why do you play basketball specifically? Because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And you've got to keep that in mind, that that's why kids are there, the fact that they want to be with their friends and they want to have fun. Keep that big picture in mind. Don't make everything a life and death matter.
Yeah, I think, you know, in my current circumstance, Tony, with just resigning a couple of weeks ago, one of the things that I have struggled with, especially since I became a head coach, kind of a full-out head coach around the age of 30, was the all-encompassing process of being a head coach. And you're talking about keeping perspective and keeping level, and keeping your players in that vein, Tony. I think for me, there's also something to be said for that when you're in charge, when you're in charge of the program. And overall, this season I feel very good about not being too high, not being too low. I think we did a good job as a staff of keeping our kids' mental place where it needed to be. But I think as a coach, you also have to think that way as well. And sometimes you can't overcoach yourself. I think that when I decided to get back into this, I wasn't going to let this consume me the way that it did at my previous job, where it just consumed me. It just spit me up and it chewed me up and spit me out, And I sometimes when you are efficient, when you want to keep that in perspective, there are people that sometimes go, well, you're not this or you're not that. Well, yeah, that's yeah, how many people come home from their job and just want to unplug, unwind, turn on Jerry Springer and put their feet up and not think? And it's the same thing for coaches. And so you have to be able to access that part of your brain where you turn it off as well. Because if you don't turn it off, the kids won't, they will feel that, and then that will put pressure on them, and that will make the circumstance even more difficult for you to coach when you're telling them to stay level, but here you are doing the things that you're doing, and you're not staying level yourself. And I think sometimes from people from the outside looking in will go, well, why aren't you this and this? Because I just got to let it go. We ask the kids to let it go. We ask them to move on. Okay, we have to move on as coaches too. And so I love what you said there about staying level, but I think it's important, and I agree with everything that you said for the players, but for coaches as well, you have to stay level. Because if you don't stay level, the kids are going to feel it. And then, even if you don't mean to do it, they're going to feel that pressure. And they're going to, some of that fun is going to be taken away from the process. And I think that's just something that can compound very, very quickly. And again, that's the art of coaching. That's not the science of coaching. And you need to be able to communicate to your team, this is what we're doing or why we're doing it or whatever it may be. And sometimes you can't control the perception of others. But I think that's really, really important as well, Tony. Sorry, I went off on
No, you're good because a lot of things in life can be consuming. Coaching, sports, athletics is definitely one of those things. And I remember bumping into a friend of mine at church, and I hadn't, talked with him for a while, and he stopped being a head coach a couple years ago. And so we were kind of talking a little bit about that, and he just mentioned, he was in his office till after midnight a lot of nights, and it was just consuming him. And so he got out of it for his own health. And I remember back, when I was a head coach a handful plus of years ago, and it's the last thing on your mind as you go to bed. When you wake up in the middle of the night, guess what? It's still there. And then when you wake up in the morning, it's still there. And like you said, whether it's subconsciously or whatever the case may be, you can exude that pressure. I mean, you can sit there and say one thing, but you can exude that pressure of it being all consuming and encompassing and all those things. And that can go on to your kids. And like we talked about earlier, the number one reason why they play athletics, why they play basketball is it's fun. And with having that much pressure on them would not be fun.
Yeah, exactly. So, coaches, get signed up today for the fourth annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with three on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and operator and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfigera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at a Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. We've got three great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes a Pen and a Napkin Clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social. And that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the fourth annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. I got next up here, Tony. I got do the right thing the right way all the time. Now, you talked about teaching what is important. Here's what we're going to emphasize here. We're going to be, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect team. You can't do everything. If you did that, everybody would be having 4 or 5 hour practices every single day to really do everything the way that it needs to be done in the game. It's simply impossible to do. But what you are going to emphasize, you need to do it the right, you need to do the right thing the right way all the time. I think of Villanova with Jay Wright. What do you think of? Playing off pivots of 2 feet, pivots and jump stops, pivots and jump stops. When you think of Patino's teams at like Louisville and at Kentucky, you think of pressure trapping,
defense, and 3-point shooting.
Absolutely. And that's what you're going to emphasize, but you're going to do those things, whatever it is. We're going to be so good at that. And we're going to do this thing, the right way, all the time. And everything else, we're going to try and fill in the cracks. We're going to try and touch on it. I think I saw something on a deal where there's 11 or 12 major areas in the game. You know, transition offense, transition defense, zone attack, you know, whatever those things are, rebounding, etc. And basically, and this hit me right in between the eyes. You need to find the 3 or 4 things on this list that you want to be great at with this team. Then you need to find 4 or 5 things that you're okay at, and then you got to have 3 things on this list that you just got to be comfortable going, okay, I just hope we get through it and we can hide this weakness, is essentially the way that they broke it down. But those 3 or 4 things that you choose to be great at with your team, you have to be great at them, and you have, in order to be great at it, just with anything, you have to do the right thing the right way all the time.
100%. And the teams that we have to understand, the really, really good teams, they're fundamental. You know, I remember meeting Don Showalter, one of my first times as a young coach. And one of the things that he did that I was super, super impressed with, he got to coach the McDonald's All-American game in Ames. And you know, my question to him is, so, you know, obviously when you're running those practices, what do you do? And he goes, Tony, the thing with those guys is they are amazing athletes. He goes, but the one thing that you're going to find is that you never graduate from a skill. And he goes, we did a lot of the things that we did at Mid Prairie in terms of emphasizing fundamentals and playing the game the right way. And I was like, that light bulb went off. I mean, that's basketball in general, is the fact that you want to be really, really good at fundamentals and do it better than what the other team does.
Oh, absolutely. Being from the Midwest and growing up in the 80s and 90s, you think of, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it is what it is. Nebraska football, Tom Osborne, you know they're going to run the option. You got to try and stop it. And you know it's coming, and you got to do it, you know. So, I agree with you there. What's next up on your list, buddy?
The one that I love, and you kind of touched on this earlier, Marty, where you talked about the science of basketball and the art of basketball. And to me, the art of basketball, I know they call soccer the beautiful game, but I really think basketball is in that same vein. And when it's at its highest level, it's you know, at its peak, it's when five players are functioning as one. And it's beautiful when they play together on the offensive and defensive end as one. And one of the things that I enjoy about basketball, you know, is the fact that when you have a team that fulfills their role, they don't care who gets the credit, they don't care who scores, they just want to win. And they don't get caught up in some of the stuff that, hey, how many points do I have? Hey, how many, you know, rebounds or whatever the case may be. They just want to win. And I think that's the thing with basketball, is the fact that when you play with one sense of purpose, and you work together, like when you're on defense and the ball gets passed, you see all five players as the ball's in the air move to where they're supposed to be. To me, that's just, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if it gets a whole lot better than that. And so when you can get a group to sacrifice their individual egos for what's best for the team, that's the thing that I love about basketball.
And I think to do that, kind of to build off of that and kind of tie in one of my bullet points to your bullet point, Tony. In order to do that, you know, for everybody to have those roles, you have to hold everybody to the same standard. You know, hey, Billy and Tommy, yeah, we need you to score, and you've got to be great at scoring. And Pete, you got to do this and this. And Fred at the, you know, 12th guy, hey, we still need you to practice just as hard as these guys, you know. And those standards and expectations are so very, very important. And I think in order to coach, and in order to get your team to that point, that's one of the areas that you build your trust with your team in order for everybody to fulfill their role, is to hold everybody to the same standard and same expectation. And nobody, I don't know if anybody's perfect at it. I think we all try our best at it. There's things that we're going to miss. You know, you might miss a little body language here with a kid, or, you know, this, that, or the other thing, you know. But I think those two things kind of tie together. If my piggyback on your statement makes sense, Tony, I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, the standard is the standard, and you want to hold everybody to it. You want to make sure that everybody's accountable, you know. And it's not like there are some kids that are just gifted athletically, that, you know, they hit the DNA lottery, if you will. And you're not trying to hold a kid that doesn't have the, you know, didn't get the DNA lottery in their favor. You're not holding them, hey, you got to be able to jump higher, you got to be able to, you know, you got to be 4 inches taller. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, this is how hard we go every time.
Yeah.
When there's a loose ball, we all get on the floor. It's not just these two or three job. Everybody's got to block out, you know. And it's the standard's the standard, and just making sure that people are held accountable. Because we've talked before, Marty, about the fact that you want to make sure as a coach that you interact with everybody on your team. And it's the same thing at the accountability level. Everybody is held accountable on your team.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to have that. So, next thing I've got, Tony, and I think Coach Berg put this on the thread, mistakes. You got to recognize them, you got to admit them, you got to learn from them, and then you got to forget them. And I think part of overcoaching, if you get your butt beat on December 5th by 15 rebounds, and you give up 20 offensive rebounds and you lose because you gave up too many rebounds, you didn't do anything on the glass. Yeah, you come in, you recognize it, you admit it, hey, we got to do this and this. We do more rebounding drills, and then we forget about it. You're not going to spend, 3 weeks later, because of what happened on December 5th, on December 20th, you're going to be doing an hour's worth of rebounding drills because you're still mad about the game that you lost two and a half weeks before that because of it. And that's part of the overcoaching thing there as well. Okay, hey, we got to learn from it, or we recognize it, we admit it. Okay, hey, we got to work on our press break more. Here's what we're going to do. We're just going to take an extra, after we spend maybe 10 minutes the first day, now the next day it's 5 minutes, but every day we're going to spend 3 minutes on this. Bang, 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 just to make sure that we're not in that situation again. That's something that we learn from. And then you move on from it and you don't bring it up. You get out rebounded by, 20 on December 5th, and then you're playing another game on January 22nd and you're getting beat on the boards again, which is probably going to happen because that's the nature of the season. And you come back in. This is just like the game on December 5th against East High. You're not rebounding. It's like, you got to let it go. You got to let it go. And you can't overcoach those type of things. And when it comes to mistakes, and again, one of the things that I've learned through my own rough lessons and own mistakes is the kids are going to let go of games a lot faster than we do as coaches. They're usually going to let go of it. We're the ones that hold on to it the most, and when we start overcoaching it because we can't let go of it, to the point where it's unhealthy is what I mean, Tony. Part of our job is to a degree not letting it go, but we can't hold on to it to where the point it's unhealthy and it's a negative thing on the team here. But I think that's a big part of not overcoaching the mistakes that you make in that regard.
Yeah, and the thing I think you mentioned as far as the process go, I like the steps that Coach mentioned. And again, I know he got this from Coach Smith, because I think Smith, instead of saying forget it, mentioned flush it. But you recognize it. I mean, that's a part of it. You can't be in denial. You recognize it. You admit it. You take accountability. You own it. Then you learn from it. And then, like you said, you don't browbeat them. I think it was Lombardi that said, preoccupation with the past leads to failure in the present. And you don't want to do that. You want to go back and you get those corrections made. And it might be, hey, for the next couple weeks, week, whatever, we're going to spend 10 more minutes on our press break, or we're going to do some rebounding drills because we got pounded on the glass and we want to make sure our technique's better. But you don't sit there and do it for 4 weeks or 8 weeks where you are just doing hours worth of rebounding drills every night, because the next thing you know, your other things, as you put the finger in a spot in the dam that's leaking, the other ones are going to pop open there. And so, you have to move on, correct it, learn from it, flush it. Don't browbeat them.
Mm-hmm. I got two or three more things, Tony. How many more you got?
I think I got one or two.
Okay.
The next one that I thought was really good is less is more and simple wins. And I think a lot of times, with overcoaching, obviously you're trying to make it too complex. You're trying to be, there's too much complication with it. And a lot of times basketball is a simple game. You want to make simple plays. Don't make it harder than what it has to be. Simple wins. You don't have to run, this complex offense or defense. Hey, if they dribble to the right side of the floor, we'll be man. And then if they throw it over the left side of the floor, we'll switch zone. And if it comes back to the right, we'll go back to man again. You're going to confuse everybody on your team. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get to that thing that we talked about earlier, which is paralysis by analysis. And again, I'm not talking about making it so simple that, at the third grade level, but simple wins games. Make the simple play, make the simple pass. Talk on defense. Those are all things you can do, but just make sure that, you keep things simple. It's a simple game. Don't make it out to be rocket science. It definitely is not that. So make sure you're simplifying what you are emphasizing and what you are doing in your practice plan as a coach.
Yeah. I had that as well. Essentially, too many sets, too big of a playbook, that type of thing. I've been, I don't know if you've seen them or not, Tony, the playbook polls that I've been putting out there, just out of curiosity, Huh?
I've been voting on them.
You've been voting? All right.
Yeah.
All right. I like that. I didn't know I could see who could vote. Can I figure that out? You're kind of the poll guy.
I do some polls. I don't think you can on that one.
Okay. Which is fine. I don't need to know. I can go. That's fine. But it's been interesting to see it because, even in my own mind, with our with our stuff this year. You know, we had a dream playbook scenario, and I think everybody, you know, basically what I've learned is you have your dream playbook scenario, and then basically you cut that in half, and that's what you'll end up with by the end of the season. So if you hope to have 10 sets in by the end of the season, you're probably really going to have five. You know, five that you feel comfortable with. If you want to have 10 out of bounds plays, you're going to have five, or you know what, whatever. And I think that's kind of a good rule of thumb. But I think that again, yeah, simplicity. Let your players play. Now every team is different. Some teams you're going to have an off the charts basketball IQ, especially at the high school level. You're going to have kids that you could put in 10 sets and they can run them bang, 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 bang. And you're going to have other teams that you can barely put in two sets and they're going to be confused by those two sets. So you really got to, and that's nothing against the kids or anything like that. It's just, that's the way brains are wired. Again, we'll go back to what we talked about earlier. I think I agree with you there. I've got two more things here.
Okay.
You know, I got this from Coach Neighbors. I really tried to do this the last 4 years. If it doesn't involve winning, I don't do it, was his quote. And that's something he learned when he was at the University of Washington was, you know, you get caught in that trap as a head coach of overcoaching everything around you. Well, I've got to do every single step of the scout. I've got to arrange the bus times. I've got to get the Gatorade ready for the road trip. I got to do this, you know, that type, you know. And that is something that I really, in the 2 years that I stepped away, Tony, that is something I knew that I had to do better. I think I did a lot better job of it this time around. But I think that's important when you're talking about overcoaching. You can't overcoach your staff around you. Here's a few guidelines. Here's this, who's that. Get it done. And get it done, you know, as long as you're meeting these three or four criterias here, or whatever it may be. Maybe it's only one criteria that you need. Maybe you don't care, you know, with whatever. But make sure that you keep that focus on, you know, we tell the players, keep the main thing the main thing. Well, especially as head coaches, we have to keep the main thing the main thing. And what's your most important thing as a head coach? You got to win games. And so you can't overcoach your support staff, your managers, all of those people around you as well.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things with our staff here that I really appreciate, like, John's phenomenal. I've obviously been doing this for a while. He's the best I've been around. There's very little doubt in my mind that you could take him from Kennedy and you could plug him in at the college level, and he would have a lot of success at that level as well. He's just really, really good. But one of the things that he also does a nice job of with his staff is he designates and gives each of us responsibilities and stuff that we do. And so you feel valued as a coach, you know, with being on his staff, and you don't want to let him down. You don't want the team down. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is something that is very, very important. If you are a control freak, you're going to burn yourself out. You've got to be able to delegate, get good people around you, and make sure that they feel appreciated, and you give them things that play to their strength, and let them do it, and don't micromanage them. Trust them to do a good job. And those things I think are very, very important.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Tony, you know that every week we have someone that we trust. We don't micromanage them. We let them do what they do. And who is they, Tony?
Well, that obviously is Europe, because they can bring it.
They do bring it, and they bring it only in the way that the Swedish rockers can. So it is Tony's turn for trivia this week. That was Tony's turn for trivia. That sounds like some more of my freebase rap skills there, buddy. So do you feel confident that you have the correct question?
I think I am confident in it. So I've been kind of emphasizing women's basketball, and so we're going to do another trivia question with that again.
Okay.
We saw the passing of the torch from Kelsey Plum to Caitlin Clark, mm-hmm. and I think we're going to see the passing of the torch one more time, this one to Juju Watkins, the freshman at USC.
You're calling it here.
She recently passed Caitlin Clark's point total her freshman year. And my question related to Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins is this. What number rank was Caitlin Clark for all-time freshman scores?
Oh.
Because obviously she's the all-time NCAA scorer as she gets ready to wrap up her senior year.
Yeah.
But where did she rank after her freshman year for all-time freshman scores?
So are we talking total points or
total points?
And I'm assuming this is just women.
Yes, just women.
Just women. I'm just going to take a stab in the dark. Fourth.
Is correct.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
You got it first try.
Yes! And it counts. Who were the top three? Cheryl Miller.
Yeah, the top three, Tina Hutchinson from back in the San Diego State days in 1984. Kelsey Mitchell, another Big Ten player. She played at Ohio State.
Yep.
And then I hope I'm saying this last one right, Trinity Carter from Texas A&M, a little bit more recent, back in 2018.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's it's impressive, you know. Anytime you're up there with those names, that's impressive. I can't believe I got it right. I can't believe I got it right on the first guess. So
you are the Stump the Schwab from ESPN.
Well, it's probably because I spent all that time sorting all those ball cards for my dad back in the day. But good problems to have. So, Tony, are you feeling a little mad right now?
I am.
Huh? You know what Mel Allen would say?
How about that?
So Tony and I decided to go down our Sweet 16 brackets here. We're not going to go all the way out. We're not going to go all the way. I mean, we could talk about who we think we're going to have in the Final Four and that type of thing. I assume you got at least to your Sweet 16 filled out, Tony.
I've got it rough. I'm kind of waiting on some injury reports.
Gotcha.
I would like to see a little bit out of Kansas yet. You know, is Hunter Dickinson and McCullers going to play? Mm-hmm. And then there's another injury that's escaping me now, but I wanted to get a little bit of an update on
the kid from Marquette.
Well. What's that?
The kid from Marquette. The point guard?
Kolick. Tyler Kolick from Marquette.
Yep.
But I'm pretty confident even without him, they're gonna be in the Sweet 16.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see here. Let's take a look here. Let's start in the East region because that's where mine is at in the upper left-hand corner here. Okay. I think this is the hardest region in my opinion.
100% agree.
Oh, man. And if we were not going down to Memphis, it would be a lot of fun to catch the games here in Omaha. Because I think Omaha might have the best little, you know, four or the eight teams here, just the competitiveness. I think it's going to be really, really good. So, Tony, out of this bracket in the East, who are your four teams in the men's? And we're going to do both, by the way. We're going to do men's and women's Sweet 16s here. So, Tony, who do you have in your bracket?
All right, so we're doing the first one. I've got UConn in the Sweet 16, and I have UConn taking on the Auburn Tigers.
Okay. And then who do you have on the bottom?
On the bottom side of it, I have your Big Ten champion Illinois Fighting Illini, Big Ten tournament champion, I should say,
Yep.
taking on your Iowa State Cyclones.
That is exactly what I had. Pretty, you know, chalky at this point. I think one of the more fascinating four-team pods is that Washington State, Drake, Iowa State, South Dakota State one that is here in Omaha. Down, you know, the old market's going to be hopping this weekend, that's for sure. But I think, yeah, I agree with you there. UConn is just playing so well right now. And Illinois is kind of hitting on all cylinders. I'm always tentative to pick a team that goes on that big run in the conference championship tournament, like Auburn, like Illinois. But I'm looking at both of their little four-team pods, and I don't see anybody on the other side that I'm like, man, they really scare me if I'm them. I you know, and I know BYU is solid. I think Illinois is just better. Same thing with San Diego State, founded in 1904 by the Germans. but I think Auburn is just better. And boy, how crazy would it be to have Drake and Iowa State playing each other in Omaha in the round of 32, Tony? Which I think is a very distinct possibility. So, yeah, that's who I had as well. So, let's go down to the West. I have North Carolina, although I think Mississippi State might mess with them a little bit. I think that 8-9, I think if there's a chance for an upset of the one seed, I think that's kind of what I'm looking at right there. Yeah. And then I have Alabama coming out there as the 4. And then below that, on the other side of it, I've got Baylor, just because I just don't think Clemson or New Mexico, and I could be wrong here, but I just don't see that. But I'm going to pick a little upset here. I'm going to have Dayton over Arizona. I'm going to put Dayton in the Sweet 16, Tony.
That's one of the things with Arizona is, you know, I watched some of the experts, quote-unquote experts. They had Arizona in the Final Four. I don't buy Arizona in the Final Four. I am going to put them in the Sweet 16. I think they're going to escape out of that. I'm rooting for is it Dan Munson that's the Long Beach State coach? I'm rooting for him to knock him off just because it's his last game at Long Beach whenever they lose. That was a great story to see him make the NCAA tournament after resigning. But I'm going to go Arizona. With Baylor, I'm struggling there. I think Clemson or New Mexico could get them, but I'm going to go with Baylor. And then another one I struggle with is Alabama. I love Alabama, obviously, but they just don't guard. They're kind of like Kentucky. They don't defend well. Uh-huh. Coach Oates, has talked about some defensive tweaks and stuff in preparation and getting ready. I'm going to believe that he's going to do that, so I'm going to put them as well. In the Sweet 16, along with North Carolina in the West. So I pretty much have the same, but this is one I flip-flop a lot on. I'm confident in Carolina, even though I do think Mississippi State, Chris Jans, is they're very physical. He's a defensive wizard. I think they're going to give North Carolina everything they want. North Carolina is kind of a finesse team, but I think this team's got a little bit more grit to it than maybe last year's team that Hubert Davis had there. But some of those other teams, the Baylors and the Alabamas and Arizona, I'm just not real confident in. And to be honest with you, you know, we're kind of talking earlier about the East. I think the West is the easiest of the brackets. And I almost feel like UConn should have that instead of what they have, but I digress.
Or I would, you know, if Iowa State was the 2 seed here instead of Arizona, I would have Iowa State in the Final Four in a heartbeat.
The crazy thing, Marty, when you look at that, like Iowa State, there were some that were arguing that Iowa State should be a 1 seed instead of North Carolina. And, you know, you get ready to take a look at it and you see Iowa State's a 2 seed. Okay, I understand that. Probably like the 5th, 6th ranked team at the worst. And when they come to reveal where they had Iowa State put, they had Iowa State at 8. And I didn't get that one.
I didn't get that either. I honestly did not. They are playing as well as anybody. They have beaten Houston twice Houston's only lost four games, I believe, and Iowa State has two of them. And so, including just, they took them behind the woodshed this weekend. And, you know, so I don't get it. Again, I'm not in charge. I do my job, and I talk about it on a podcast. So, let's move on to the Midwest, Tony. It's your turn to go first. Who do you have in the Sweet 16?
You know, Purdue's lost, is it three straight years to a double-digit seed?
Yeah.
I'm going to roll the dice and go with them. So I'm going to have Purdue there. And then I'm going to take McNeese State will be my other one. I think they're going to knock off Gonzaga, and I think they're going to take down. I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm kind of waiting to see on Kansas's injury report. I know that Dickinson, I think they mentioned he was back practicing. McCullers was supposed to practice today. I did not hear if he did or not. But I'm going to take McNeese as my other Sweet 16 team taking on Purdue. And then in the bottom half of it, I'm going to go with your Creighton Blue Jays. Uh-huh. I think they're going to knock off a former coach at Creighton, if I remember correctly, Dana Altman.
Oh, Dana, yes.
Yep. And then for the other Sweet 16 team, I am taking the Tennessee Volunteers.
Yeah. You want to look up most awkward moment in coaching history? Dana Altman, when he was the Arkansas coach for 17 minutes, and he was doing Woo Pig Suey at his introductory press conference. He would have rather been on the moon at that point.
Yes.
Tony, I have the exact same thing. You want my Stephen A. Smith hot take here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I'm going to offend people by this, but here's my truth. If it didn't say Kansas on the front of their jersey, they'd be a 6 or 7 seed.
Yes.
I firmly believe that.
I agree with it.
Okay. And that's why I kind of had McNeese. You know, there's going to be one that's going to bust through here. And I just kind of feel it. I think Creighton's really good. I'm not going to be surprised if Oregon were to beat them. I do have Oregon over South Carolina. I think it would be a heck of a game. It would tug at a lot of heartstrings here in Omaha. And that's no slight against Coach Mack and his staff. I think it's going to be a close game. I think Creighton is just better. But I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. And I would not be surprised if Oregon beat them in that game to make it to the Sweet 16. But we average minds think alike. And we have the exact same thing there, buddy. So let's go up to the South region. And I have Houston. Now, go Big Red Friday night, 5:50, FedEx Forum. Be there. I will be there. Excited. So,
yeah.
But I do have Houston coming out of there. I think they're going to come out and play really well this weekend. As much as I hate to say it, I think they're going to come out and play well. I've got Wisconsin. I have Kentucky. And then I have Florida. A little SEC rematch there in the Sweet 16 between Kentucky and Florida. Those are the four teams I have out of the East, Tony. What do you got?
I'm really close in the same ones. I've got Houston. The other one I have there as well is Wisconsin. I think they're going to take out Duke. Then on the bottom half of it, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm going Kentucky Sweet 16, but it wouldn't surprise me with how inconsistent they are if they were to get taken out. And then I'm going to go Marquette. I think the loss that Florida had of their big man with the lower leg injury, that's going to hurt their rebounding. And I believe Tyler Kolek, he might not go against Western Kentucky, but I could definitely see him playing against the Gators.
Okay. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin Video Library. Well, Tony, let's jump into the women's bracket then. Interesting deal. We'll get to it when we get to it here. You want to start in Albany or Portland?
Let's go Albany.
Okay. All right. You want to go Albany? Well, let's go Albany one here. I could go first here. Okay. South Carolina. And you know, women's tends to be a little more chalky than the guys, especially with the home courts and stuff. But I've got a couple here. South Carolina, Indiana. I am going to be a little bit of a homer here. I am going to pick Nebraska to beat Oregon State at Oregon State. And I've got Notre Dame. You know, that's kind of one of my bigger upsets there was Nebraska over Oregon State in Corvallis. I think Nebraska's playing really well right now. I think they feel comfortable with their roles and who they are, and I think that they're going to come out of it here and make a Sweet 16 run.
Okay. I'm also going to go South Carolina. I think I'm going to end up with Indiana, but they had some injuries at the end. That's another one I'm kind of waiting on because I think Oklahoma, after getting beat by Iowa State, I think Oklahoma is going to be focused. That's going to be a heck of a game in that round of 32 between Oklahoma and Indiana. I'm going to go Indiana, but I a little bit waffly on that.
Four fives are really good.
What's that?
The four fives are really good across the board here. I think they did a nice job. 100%
agree.
Yeah, yep.
And then I'm going to go Oregon State. I want to go Nebraska after watching Nebraska in the Big Ten championship game against Iowa. I was super impressed by them. But if I've been saying all year the Pac-12 is the best conference for women's, and Oregon State's a three seed. It's in Corvallis. I'm gonna go with the Oregon State Beavers there, and then I'm also gonna go with Ole Miss knocking off Notre Dame.
Oh wow, Tony V, go big or go home. All right,
I've heard that, and that's why I'm home. But yeah, we'll see.
Because it's negative 32 degrees outside.
It is.
All right, Albany 2.
All right, so is my turn or your turn? I'm sorry.
I went first. Yeah, you go. You go first here. By the way, Murderers Row.
Oh my goodness! I looked at this, Marty, and I just kind of give you some things off the top of my head. Number one, it would not shock me if West Virginia beat Iowa. It just would not. West Virginia, I watched them the other night and just was very, very impressed with West Virginia. And the one thing about West Virginia that some people may not realize, they lead the women's, all women's, in steals. And I think they're really going to frustrate Iowa's guards. And so if that game was not in Iowa City, it would not surprise me, but I'm going to go Iowa. All right. For my team that's going to face Iowa in the Sweet 16, I'm going Kansas State. I almost went Colorado. Kansas State was the team that ended up knocking off West Virginia. And then Kansas State got beat by Texas, if I remember correctly. But Colorado, I mean, that's a really good team too. Yep. And I think they beat LSU early in the year.
Yep.
And were a top five team at one time, and they're the fifth seed. That just shocks me. And then as I head to the bottom part of the bracket there, I'm going to take LSU. And then the other one I will take there would be UCLA.
I have the same thing, except I've got Colorado over K-State. You want my Stephen A. Smith hottest take, Tony?
Oh yeah, let's get it.
The NCAA doesn't know a lot about marketing when they take their most popular player in the history of the game and put them in the toughest region to make it hard for them to get to the biggest stage.
Yes, because all those games, I mean, their 32 round against West Virginia is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
And then the winner of Colorado, K-State, is going to be really tough. Wouldn't surprise me. It's the third time they'll play K-State this year.
Yeah.
And that really kind of puzzled me why they kept K-State in there.
Going back to last year, K-State has beat them 2 out of 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you go back to preseason rankings, Iowa, LSU, and UCLA were all in the top 4 in the preseason.
Yeah, I again, a little bit of a homer call. I mean, I'll acknowledge that, but I saw this come out. I'm like, holy cow, that just doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me.
No.
And you know, again, some of you may say, well, you're biased. Well, no, I'm just saying, you know, you can't tell me it's coincidence that Nebraska is playing Texas A&M in both the men's and the women's game. You know, again, yeah, that's kind of the local story around here with Trev Alberts heading down to Aggieland to be the new AD.
Yeah.
I mean, don't tell me that, oh, yeah, that just happened. I mean, the tournament does this every year. You know, and I just found it, you know, I think we're in agreement. Far and away the toughest of the four brackets. It's the UConn equivalent of what is that, the East region in
yep.
men's. This Albany 2 is just going to be, I mean, it's going to be great to watch play out, but you know, you're going to have some teams that are and you, again, you're only going to have four teams that are really happy at the end of it, but you know, I think Stanford was much weaker than UCLA. And
yes.
Stanford's still a good team. But, you know, I don't know. That's my thought. So
I would agree. And like you said about the whole marketing thing with Caitlin Clark, you had won her there. And Iowa supposedly got the number two overall ranking. And they have by far. I mean, their region might be tougher than the East region for the men, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not disagree with you. All right, let's go to Portland here. Let's go Portland 3.
Okay.
My turn to go first. I've got USC. I've got Baylor. Again, another really good 5-4 game, but Virginia Tech's battling some injuries. Baylor out of the Big 12, I think after losing to Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament the way that they did. Congrats, Coach Finley, Coach Steyer, and Coach Harris, and other Coach Finley. Great job. But I think they're going to be really ready to play. I got UConn, who is kind of peaking at the right time here. And then I've got Ohio State.
I would just say ditto. Mm-hmm. That's what I have as well. I don't think Kittley will be back for Virginia Tech, and so I think that they do not get past Baylor in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And then Portland 4.
All right. So as we head that way, maybe one of the surprise number one seeds was Texas. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put them in the Sweet 16.
Yep.
I think that Alabama will give them a decent run, but I see them in the Sweet 16. They're going to be playing Utah. I mentioned earlier, I think the Pac-12 is the most legit of the conferences.
Okay.
It is the best of the conferences. And so I think they're going to take down Gonzaga. And so I have Utah there. And then as we go to the bottom half, I'm going to go ahead and put NC State, which was everybody's darling early on,
yep,
one of the top-ranked teams, and then maybe fell off a little bit towards the end.
Yeah.
I think Tennessee's going to scare them, though, because Tennessee almost got South Carolina.
Yep.
If it wasn't for Cardoso hitting her first-ever three-point basket, South Carolina would have went down to the Volunteers. So it wouldn't surprise me if Tennessee takes out NC State. But due to maybe some inconsistencies with Tennessee, I'm going to give NC State a little bit of the edge there. But I really, really close to taking Tennessee on that one. And then I think they will be joined by Stanford.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I had Texas, Gonzaga, NC State, Stanford. I went chalk. Now, I hope it's South Dakota State because – you know, Carter Plum and
you
the fight,
might know somebody there.
Yeah, the Fighting Jacks. They would be busted through to the Sweet 16 for the first time in school history, I believe. So I would really love for that to happen, but I do think Gonzaga is going to come out of that. I think if South Dakota State were fully healthy, I think that might make a bit of a difference there. But they're not, you know, you know, they've had a great year. He called me today. He was showing off the swag that he got at the conference tournament. So he was pretty happy with that stuff. So
awesome.
Last thing, Tony. In the headlines here the last 24 hours or so, multiple teams, and there's always, if you cut it off at 68, number 69 is unhappy. If you cut it off at 72, number 73 is unhappy. And every year we have a few teams that are, why aren't we in? Why aren't we in? Why aren't we in? But what we're starting to see here, kind of rolling into what we've started to see in bowl games, where players are sitting out bowl games now. is we've got some schools that are just saying, no, we're not going to play in the NIT, and some high profile schools that again felt snubbed. Oklahoma, Pittsburgh,
St. John's,
and St. John's kind of at the top of the list of Patino.
Indiana.
Indiana is not as well. Yeah, okay. I hadn't seen that yet. I haven't looked at an NIT bracket or anything, so I was a little busy at school today. But I personally don't like it, Tony. I think you have a lot to play for. I think you can. I think in some ways it can help out your. And this is, it's crazy to think about it this way. Transfer portal opened up today. Transfer portal. This can help your status. It can help make you look attractive by making a run here in the NIT, and you're on the cusp of it. And how many times have we seen teams that have made a run in the NIT then have a really, really strong year the next year? So, yeah, that's I don't like it. Where are you at, Tony?
I absolutely hate it. The one thing I would give you, I don't know if you saw Tom Crean's rant on it on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it now. I would 100% back what Coach Crean said. You don't have a lot of time to play basketball. And to pull this opportunity away from kids, I just don't like it. I mean, if you are so worried and wrapped up in the whole transfer portal thing and your coaches, assistant coaches don't want to coach, go let them do that. If you have kids that don't want to play in it, you need what, five on the floor? You have a roster of 12 to 15. Okay, give somebody else a chance. Maybe you have a freshman kid that hasn't played a whole lot this year. Give them a chance now in the NIT type of thing. But I agree with what you said a little bit too there. If you go on a little bit of a run in the transfer, or I'm sorry, in the NIT, that can aid you in the transfer portal. Like, hey, look at us. We're you away from being in the NCAA and doing something like this next year.
Yeah.
And no, I 100% don't like it. I think you play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is, to me, again, Stephen A. Smith, hot take. This screams entitlement. And get out, play. It's more and more competitive than it ever has been. And if you believe in your team enough that you should be in the NCAA tournament, you know what? Go out and win the NIT and prove a point.
And that was what was so refreshing about Indiana State, because that's what they want to go and do.
Yeah, and I hope they do. I hope they make a great run, because I thought they deserved to be in over some other teams that got selected. By far and away, they deserved to be in.
Yes,
So.
they have the highest net to ever not get in. I think it was 33 before. They're 29, and so they took that spot up there. And you talk to anybody and like, well, they didn't get enough quad one wins. That's because quad one teams will not play them in a home and home
Correct.
on a neutral site.
Correct. No, they won't. For example, Tony, and again, logistically, it's very difficult for you because you're in Cedar Rapids, but you're probably not going to load up the Cougars and drive up to whole Western Christian if you don't have to. Why would you do that? That's a win. That's a win for whole West. All you can do is lose in that situation, in that theory, And so, yeah, that's the reason why Indiana State won't—they don't have any. So, no, I don't like it. Like I said, then prove a point. Then show people. Go, just roll through the NIT and kick the crap out of everybody and go finish your season the right way. But I just don't, I just don't, I just don't like this. I
Yeah,
don't.
and if you haven't seen Tom Crean's rant, definitely worth the, I think it's about 2 minutes.
Yeah. I'll take a look at it. I saw it, but I didn't get a chance to listen to it because I was educating America's youth here today. So,
Doggone you.
yeah, I know. I know. So, Tony, great episode. Episode 78 here, overcoaching, upholding standards. Anything to bring us home, buddy?
I'd go back to kind of like where we started, with your mistakes. All right. Recognize it, admit it. All right. Then learn from it and move on. And then make sure, keep things simple and make sure the kids are having fun.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, great episode. A lot of good things. I don't know. You want to put a Arby's roast beef on who gets the more wins in the or more teams in the Sweet 16?
That's up to you, buddy. I don't know. I mean, I could eat another Arby's roast beef if you need to, but I know you're heading to Memphis, so I want to make sure everything's all right.
Next time we get together,
all right.
let's put that little wager out there. How about that?
So, perfect.
All right. Great having Tony on again this week. We'll come up with something for next week. Hope folks are enjoying the madness. Get out to set the DVRs, clear the DVRs, get out the notepads. It's a great time to learn and just enjoy it. And if you're still playing, and I know we've got listeners who are Division I coaches on both sides of the genders here, the men's and the women's, good luck to everybody. I know only two teams are going to go at home really, really happy at every level, whether it's NAIA or junior college or Division I. But wish everybody the best on their journeys as they go into it. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to own our craft one day at a time.